BDC Backpacker. Welcome to the podcast.
What's going on, Jake? How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm very excited for our conversation today. We stumbled across each other online, and such is the nature of this world we live in today. Digital footprints, they exist, right? You can read stuff that someone posts, you can see their profile, you can see what they're interested in. You're like, cool, lots of stuff to talk about here. So to kick off the conversation, super simple, what are you working on right now that you're most excited about?
Okay, so the number one thing I'm working on right now is basically, I'm a father, I homeschool my three children along with my wife. We all have Bitcoin pseudo anonymous names. My wife is BTC Backpacker, or I'm BTC Backpacker. My wife is BTC Fanny Packer, and I got BTC Hodler, BTC Anonymous, and BTC Flipper. Those are all of my kids.
Cool.
We're really working on getting them involved into Bitcoin and understanding the whole cycle of how the financial system works, along with homeschooling, basic fundamentals, and trying to really shield out the noise of what society has brought in us to give them a well-balanced education and a mindset.
Awesome. And so I think it would be fair to say then that the most important thing in your day is a combination of Bitcoin, but education and being a father. So like number one job, being a dad.
Yeah.
Epic. What a great place to be. And was that always where you expected to get to at this stage in your life? Or was homeschooling something that came along as part of the process? Like, run me through the decision making that you've got to go through to get to that kind of point.
Yeah, so I mean, there is a little bit of backdrop. There's some medical history within all this, which would really kind of be like the baseline starting point of it all. My wife is she is fighting cancer. She has a stage 4 breast cancer. It's a HER positive metastasized breast cancer, and so with her going through her treatments and everything, we needed a lot of flexibility within our life to be able to maneuver within doctor's appointments and kind of just really, taking a hold of life and being able to be in control. The school system didn't allow us to do that. There was a lot of red tape, a lot of, you can't miss this, you can't miss that day. You know, there was just a lot of regulation and control. So that was a big start of it. But then also getting into some of the, you know, the political nature of it and some of the things we just overall didn't agree with, and it didn't line up with us. So it was really kind of meant to be. It was a blessing in disguise. So did we initially plan on this? No, but we took the situation for what had happened, and we made the best out of it. And now that she's, you know, more than several years, you know, since being diagnosed and is kind of pretty stable now, we have thus ran with the situation and really enjoyed being able to take hold and be in control. I guess we're a little bit of control freaks. we like to be in control of our lives and be able to educate our children because we chose to have these kids. So it was really just the stars were aligned, and now we've been able to implement, financial, education within the kids, reading, writing, arithmetic, the fundamentals. And we're able to eliminate a lot of that, exterior nonsense of, just people doing things that we just don't align with.
So interesting. Well, and everyone's experience through life is different.
Yeah,
we don't know what's going to happen every single day. You can wake up and something incredible can happen, or something horrible can happen. You just never know.
You don't.
I have to ask, and I hope you don't mind this. Please share as much or as little as you want. But in terms of the cancer journey that your wife has been through, that must have been a very, very difficult, emotional, up and down process. To share very briefly, my mother-in-law has been going through a breast cancer experience too. And I confess, I don't know the exact type of breast cancer she had off the top of my mind. But it was an extraordinary thing to witness, where she's now, I think it's called cancer-free or in remission. I couldn't say the right phrase exactly, but it's been 2 to 3 years of a journey through which she's gone through all these different treatments, gone to these different specialists, gone to these different places. And the upshot was she ended up having a double mastectomy, but didn't go through the chemotherapy route and chose a bunch of alternative therapies. We went to Mexico with her to a place called Hope for Cancer. She was trying all sorts of different protocols with natural approaches and non-drug and non-invasive. And what was extraordinary was the system in place for cancer treatment is like, oh, you got cancer. Right, first you've got to do is get the surgery done. Then you've got a pump full of drugs. And the drop-off stats of like 5 years plus, if you go down the heavy chemo route, are very concerning. It's like you might do okay initially, but then like what happens after that? And the extraordinary thing with an illness like that is the pressure is just put on. Whew, that's it, guys. You've got the diagnosis. You're out. And that decision-making position you find yourself in, especially as the individual, like there's only so much support you can give as the son-in-law in my case, but stick or twist. Like how do you decide what route to go down? And how's the experience been for you? I mean, I know I'm sure it's a sensitive subject, but it's come up. And it's
yeah, really you know, resonates. I mean, we're very open people. Me and my wife and my kids, we're pretty based. We say stuff, we don't hold back, and we're okay with sharing our story. Cool. It's a story to be shared, and we're not ashamed by it. Nor is my wife, you know, feel embarrassed or anything like that. We had a lot of places tell us when she found out that they wanted to. My wife was pregnant with our third, in her third, second trimester, going into her third trimester, and they were saying terminate. They won't give her the cancer. They have to terminate the baby, and that's against our morals and values. So we didn't accept that, and we got second and third opinions, and then we finally got. Put in touch with a place called OHSU, which is a medical science university and hospital. And they were willing to say like, hey, there is a trial and we did do a trial. And I believe we were successful within that trial, considering it's going on about 10 years. We were successful with that. So we didn't take no for an answer. We continue to go through the trial and like you said, when we found out and I heard that, I'll never forget where I was at the time. At the time I was working in Hawaii because we lived in Hawaii prior to where we live now. And I was working in Hawaii and I got a phone call and I'll never forget the phone call exactly where I was at in the parking lot, where I was at and how I felt. I took the first flight over and I was there to be there with my wife and to basically continue, you know, start the process. Upon her finding out, which was January, I believe, 27th, she started treatment February 14th, Valentine's Day. And she got started right into chemotherapy. Now, the interesting thing is with starting this journey and this process with her, not only was a psychological toll, it was a physical toll as well, because, you know, it's very demanding in your time. With having to raise the two other children and be there for your wife and, you know, all these multiple appointments and financially being able to live. We're very grateful for our living situation. We have a house that's right behind me. It's a tiny house. They're mobile. They're on wheels. So you can attach it to a truck and we can pull it wherever. So we are very grateful to be living in it, you know, to be able to take our home with us. You know, if we were caught in a 30-year or even now what they're doing, 50-year mortgages, our house would have been gone. I couldn't afford that. But we paid for our house in cash and we paid for our vehicles in cash. And so we were very grateful to not been in any debt at the time. And so we were able to just literally relocate our life up to Vancouver, Washington, and seek treatment there. Naturally, we are very homeopathic. We're very cautious on the foods and the things we bring into our bodies. And it really... that process really sped up once we realized what chemotherapy and cancer and everything really was. You know how they say it doesn't affect you until it affects you, right? Until you hear these stories, but then once you're living it, it's different. It's a different ball game. We've really got into the medicinal side of things and really watching what we put in our bodies. And I am a believer now more than ever that has also helped out with this cancer journey. with taking the pharmaceutical side of things, but also implementing the homeopathic and natural side of things of just overall living a healthy, clean lifestyle. So yeah, it was a lot to take in. We did do a lot of therapy because there's a psychological side to it. Our kids, we all did therapy, and it was the best thing ever, because you don't realize how lost you are in the journey and how difficult it is. And but it's a beautiful thing in the fact that this is a story that we can share with other people and other people that are going through this. Because not everybody that gets cancer is just some single individual or someone who's 65 years old and retired, right? There's people who are young like us who have to take the situation for what it is, and you need to figure out how to like work through it. And we're definitely a testament to that.
And so tell me, Backpacker, the situation that your wife now finds herself in is a stable position, and the cancer has subsided essentially.
So they can't say it's cancer free because her cancer is fed off of hormones. And as a woman, she naturally gives off hormones. So she was put on this medication that basically suppresses her hormones, that gives her just enough to basically be alive and healthy, but not too much where it would feed the cancer. So we do go in for regular checkups, and she just recently stopped taking her, because they found her blood work to be good enough. She stopped taking her oral cancer medication, and she now goes in for bone chemotherapy, because the next place it's going to go is potentially her brain and, you know, her bones or all these other places. So she's not technically cancer free, but she is, nothing has changed. It's kind of been stagnant. So for us, we take that as a win. And because if it's not growing or doing anything, then that's a win for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, and yeah. As a mother of three kids, she's the engine room of the family. Yeah, I mean, God bless to that. Fucking hell, that would be so difficult. Like, if I even think about that scenario you've just walked me through, wow. I mean, it must have been so tough on yourself as well to think about, like, oh my God, what happens if I've got to do this on my own?
And it's scary, and we've had these conversations.
Heaven forbid, right?
Yeah, no, we've had them. Oh. We've had them, Jake. We've had these conversations of end of life. Hey, what's going to happen? How's this going to work out? You know, and they're not easy conversations to have, but they need to be had. You know, and we not only we have to have these conversations because it can happen now, and tomorrow's never guaranteed, and that's how we live our life. Tomorrow's never guaranteed, you know. So yeah, absolutely, it's so important to be open and honest and transparent.
Gosh, I mean, what a journey already you're taking me through. I'm loving it in a sense because it's so real, right? Yeah. People face these problems every single day, and instead of bottling them up, making it like an under the cover thing where, you know, no, don't tell anyone this is going on, I think quite the opposite is actually the most valuable, where you actually have to process this information and understand it. What I'm intrigued to get more of a grasp on here is, you know, when a big moment like this appears in your life, one thing I often look at is, like, you know, when the information changes, do you change too? And this can be in relation to, frankly, anything. But when people stay stuck with their previous opinion, even though the information is clearly different, that frustrates me. And it's like, that's actually stupidity, in my opinion.
Yes.
You must have learned so much since this all began. What do you think is the root cause of it? Like, is it just a lifetime of toxicity from environmental issues, what goes in your mouth, what you might have been vaccinated with? Like, who knows, right? The Wi-Fi, the 5G.
Yeah.
Have you come to any clear conclusions as to, like, why would a woman in their, you know, childbearing years actually even get cancer in the first place?
Yeah, so from a medical standpoint, she did go in and get genetical testing, and the genetical testing turned back to be negative, which means that it wasn't passed on through genetics. So we are really grateful to be able to qualify and get that, because that testing is very expensive, and we were able to get that medically covered. So we were very grateful for that. Not everybody gets that or can afford that. So once we were able to kind of like push that off of the table, we kind of really dove deep down into why, like, what did we do? Like, you know, was it the way we lived or where we lived at and this and that? And that's a hard question to answer because I am a believer and we are believers of in the fact that if you live in heavy polluted areas or, you know, you consume things that maybe in your 20s, you just feel invincible and you can just consume and it's not going to affect you, but maybe it affects other people earlier. We didn't, you know, we went down all avenues of things like 5G towers and chemtrails and, you know, I mean, you name it, fertilizers, organic, non-organic. I mean, we went down the line of all that, but at the end of the day, it's an impossible thing to figure out what really had caused it or what, how did it happen? Now, I'm a believer that we all have a cancer gene in us and it's just a gene that goes rogue, but what causes it to go rogue? Right. So it was a hard question for us to answer, you know, and that was a therapy part two, because we went for a long time questioning why, what if, why, how could we have, we should have done this. We didn't do that. And that ate us up. That ate us up a lot. And so we had to establish the ability to gain acceptance and to be able to psychologically be able to stop the mind warfare of why and how and what, and figure out what do we need to do for ourselves to move past this, accept it, but grow as people. And what can we do and deliver, or what can we give to other people as knowledge or just overall spiritual support of being able to push past this? And that was a big one for us because I felt guilty. She felt guilty, like she was failing. I felt guilty as a father, like I wasn't able to give my 100% because I felt like I was so stretched out, you know, and thin in all these places of where I should be, you know, being a man and providing for my family. And then I felt like I was like abandoning my kids because I felt like they weren't getting all the attention they should have been getting, like maybe other people are able to give. So we had to fix our minds before anything. And doing that has allowed us to be where we are, who we are today, and just overall good spirited.
Brilliant. I love that conclusion because it actually resonates with a similar one that, you know, my mother-in-law had in a sense, and some treatment that she went through where, so a lady I had on my podcast, Dr. Jin Ong, Jin was traditionally trained as an osteopath, but has got all sorts of different influences on her healthcare practice. And one of the big things that she now focuses on is emotional health. And so she will coach people through serious illness, whether it be cancers or different types of surgery, and she'll help them, like I did a 3-month coaching program with her, for example, to process deep set emotion. And what Jin's finding is that if you help people through the storytelling that they give themselves every single day and to release deep set angst, it can even be intergenerational stuff that they inherited from their parents that conditions them to think a certain way, that release of emotion opens up the body to heal. And you've reached this very, very similar conclusion, but through a different route. I'll share the episode with you when we finish recording, because it will be really interesting for you to have a look. And Jin's released a book recently that you guys could read that might be helpful for your wife too, because it's a kind of structured coaching process to say, okay, you've got this illness today, but like, what's next? And sitting in that space of anger, of frustration, of guilt, of shame, it's a very low vibration. And that just brings more low vibration stuff to you. Yeah. So the irony is as you shift through that thought process and that negativity, you're able to improve your vibration essentially, and then better things happen. Yes. Wow, cool. Okay. And so does anything resonate there that you'd like to chime on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're really big on, like, it sounds like kind of cliche, but we're really big on about the vibe. Right. Like, what's the vibe? Am I vibing with you? Am I not vibing? I mean, am I vibing with you right now with this podcast? Mm. Absolutely. I love it. This is great. If I'm not vibing with somebody, or if somebody doesn't bring value in our life, then we don't act to try to, like, oh, play the game. Like, we just don't vibe with you and it's just not working. And so if there's no value that you can bring to me or I can bring to you, then I think we just need to part ways, and that's okay. I think as a society, we're so caught up in needing to please people or look a certain way or act or do a certain thing. And I think that is so far from the truth. I think it's disingenuine. I think that in general, it's all about vibe and connecting with people. And it's okay. It's just like people think it's so bad when you don't connect with somebody, or like it's like the end of the world. Or if you have a different view, if you have a different view on something, that's fine. It's not that big of a, it's not the end of the world. You know what I mean? You can have different views, but as long as one view, but if you still vibe, then it's fantastic, right? So I guess like what I'm really big on also controlling the controllable. If there's a situation that I cannot control, then, and that's okay. I only can control what I can control or believe or act and do my own actions. I can't do what, be forced to do what other people are doing or try to conform to them, like, because that's just not a real thing. So yeah, the situation in itself has allowed us to have extremely strong relationships. It really embrace and respect relationships more so than ever. So it's been phenomenal.
And it's interesting, isn't it, how it's like one's darkest moments or hardest times are what forms the best things.
Yeah.
Like ironically, it's like you've got to hit those moments of like true fear or true anger or true guilt to then go the other way and realize, oh, okay, I wasn't getting that quite right. And a lot of this is to do with mindset. I think that's why these podcasts are so fun, because it's like, how do you think? Mm-hmm. And how you think completely affects the outcomes that you're getting in daily life. And the nice part is you can change how you think. Yes. In spite of those dark moments, like people be like, oh my God, my life's so shit, I can't do anything about it. It's like, no, bullshit. It's up to you. And it's only you. But look at all these people talking about these experiences they've had where they've changed.
Yeah.
And they're happy about it. And you're like, get me a piece of that. Talk about a vibe. I mean, that's how I feel right now. This is awesome, because it's like, okay, lots of things resonate. You don't have to be the same. And something I think I really want to hammer on here is the having the strength to be like, sorry, this vibe isn't working. I'm out. Because that's the conformity piece that you're talking about, like where one feels guilty for not allowing someone else to feel happy because you're not behaving how they want. It's like, well, no, your emotions are not my problem.
That's it, man. That's 100% it.
Whoa. Okay, and so backpacker, I want to get to this idea. There's a few directions I want to go, but this is something that catches my attention really very strongly, is having no debt. So you mentioned like you made some decisions, you paid cash for your cars and for the property that you guys live in. How important was that for you from a position of decision-making power? And like, what would it have looked like had you been in debt?
Yeah, man, it was, well, it's crazy because in Hawaii, we were going through a little bit of a hard time, and that wasn't the case in Hawaii. And so we worked really hard in our 20s. To work two jobs, opposite schedules, a lot of sacrifice. And we did have the, we had the energy. We were young. We were still young. I mean, we're not old now, but we did. And so we were able to pull ourselves out of it. And then when we pulled ourselves out of it and we were able to sit back and kind of, you know, go like, okay, what do we want to do? You know, how do we want to approach this? And when we knew we wanted a home, we knew we wanted kind of like the American dream, you know, at the time. And mind you, we knew nothing about Bitcoin. You know, Hawaii automatically is like 4 years behind on everything. And, you know, this is back in, you know, we're like, you know, this is a long time ago, right? We're in Hawaii. Like we actually got into Hawaii like in 2009, you know, and we were running a farm and everything. And this, anyways, this whole process, but if I had debt when we had gone through what she had gone through, I don't know what the situation would be, because then you get into the debt spiral of what we all know, with interest and everything and not being able to like work hard to pay that off. So it was really ironic how grateful we were to not be in that situation when she got diagnosed. And but the being able to be debt free and to be able to pay for the house in cash and the cars in cash is just a testament to our hard work. We knew it did help a little bit that her grandfather was like a financial advisor, but he was really TradFi. But he always preached, you know, if you can pay for it in cash, pay for it in cash. If you can work for yourself, work for yourself. Don't rely on other people. Don't rely on the system, right? So he really beat that into us. And so I was very grateful. We were both very grateful to have that mindset already of like kind of self-sovereignty and not just relying on the system. So I think that in a nutshell, right now being debt free and not having all this, this being trapped in the system and being controlled, because that's what it is. You're controlled and then you have to conform to everything else. Mm-hmm. It's just given us the opportunity to even pursue more so what we're doing now, being able to do the homeschooling, smash hard, stack them sats hard, you know what I mean? And just really kind of take our life into control. If we were in that situation when she had cancer and we had the amount of debt we had, I don't know what the outcome would be. And it's a scary thing to think about, you know, but, and we never really thought much about that. You know, I don't know why, but it was just something that I don't think we were really fixated on because we worked hard to get out of it. And it's like that chapter was closed. And then we started a new chapter, you know, cause life is like full of like chapters and ebbs and flows. Absolutely. And like seasons or whatever you want to call it. I get really into that. You know, we're all going through different seasons, but so it's just been phenomenal and we've worked hard, you know, to be where we're at. You know, it definitely wasn't given. And yeah, my house isn't like $400,000, but it doesn't matter because I have the freedom. And as we all know, if you have time, you're free.
Mm. And it's like, that's what true wealth is time.
Yeah. Yes.
Like really, like what's the point being a multi-millionaire when in order to A, achieve that, but B, sustain that, you have to work 18-hour days. You can't sustain a marriage. Your kids never see you. It's like, what for? What? I mean, at least that's your choice. Go for it.
I mean,
the system coaches you to kind of, that's the only goal. It's like, well, is it?
It's crazy. It blows my mind, Jake. It blows my mind. Like that's painted. That's what they tell you when you're in school. Mm. Go to school. Go $300,000 in debt or whatever. Go, you know, buy the house and here's the car and here's the credit card when you're 18. Seriously, that's what happens. And it just blows my mind, you know, and a lot of the time it's not the kid's fault because the parents should be parenting, but then the parents are also a victim of this system because their parents maybe fell victim to it themselves. Mm. So
it's almost inherited.
The cycle.
So interesting. And so it's essentially being debt-free on critical assets such as transport, such as housing. It gives you a base layer from which to make a different set of decisions, essentially. And
yes,
that is a very powerful place to be. The Bitcoin piece is crucial here because if Bitcoin didn't exist, I don't know if you'd even be able to think like that in some ways. So let's spend a little time here. So when did you first hear about Bitcoin? How did you start learning about it? And I love these kind of Bitcoin journeys because everyone's different.
Yeah. Yeah. So we first, man, it's kind of, it feels so crazy saying this. We first heard about Bitcoin back, I think it was like 2022, but see, we were really into the altcoins in the beginning.
Yep.
And I love that. I think it's awesome. Some people are like, they're ashamed to say, I thought it was fantastic because I'm happy I got it out of the way.
Yeah, you got to kind of get it out of the system. Yeah.
So we got into the Coinbase, you know, and got into all that. How did I hear about it? There was a friend of ours who was into it and they started doing like a Pi Coin and some other things. I don't remember what it was. And so I got into it. I think I had like Cardano and you know, XRP and all the nonsense, right? I got into all that. And then I started like, you know, putting like $20 here, $20 there. Definitely not really into it. Just kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. You know, oh, this is great. Introduction to the markets, whatever. You know, this is the next new best thing. And then, I mean, it's not like a very princess fairy tale story. I was mowing a lawn one day and I'm listening to this one podcast and then the algorithm fed the algorithm fed me during mowing a lawn, a Michael Saylor clip. And Michael Saylor, if you well know that he's a lot to digest, if you're just new in Bitcoin, he's talking all this stuff. You're just like, what's going on? So he's talking about all this stuff. And I didn't even understand half of what he was saying, but it was enough for me to be like, I need to understand what this Bitcoin thing is, because it's a cryptocurrency. That's what I thought. It's all the same thing, right? And then I started just deep diving into Saylor videos and then Antonopoulos videos. And then that was it. I was hooked, because I had enough. I was blessed to have enough financial knowledge to know how markets work, charts work, supply and demand, all these things, right? I was just history, just for my financial history in itself. You know, we had some stuff in some ETFs, some stocks and bonds that were done from way back in the day. We took all that stuff out. I took all my altcoins out and rolled it all into Bitcoin. I took a loss on a lot of stuff, but I didn't care. I literally just went from 0 to 100 straight up super quick. And then I just went down the rabbit hole. And I wouldn't say that Fanny Packer, my wife, that she was into it as early as I was, but I think she started getting tired of hearing the podcasts. She was like, you're listening to this 24/7. You're constantly on the computer, on your phone. You're like, I mean, what is, like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going into this. And then so I started breaking it down to her, and then she started taking interest. And then it was when she first, I really wanted to buy some Bitcoin at the time. And she was like this. She just goes, here's a couple $100, you know, put it in, this and that. She goes, but just remember, if you're okay with losing it. I said, yeah, absolutely. And she goes, really? And I go, yeah. She goes, okay. And then that was it. Once we were both fully invested, and she was always open to hearing and to knowing about this, but she just wasn't down the rabbit hole yet. And then when she got down the rabbit hole, now she is 100% more hardcore than me. It's like crazy. Like, we just went to the bank right now. She's like, babe, we need to go to the bank. And I'm like, oh, okay. She goes, we need to put money in our Strike account, like today, like right now. I'm like, oh, okay. She goes, we just need to have it ready. I'm like, okay. And so she, mind you, my wife just had knee surgery. So she's 2 weeks fresh out of knee surgery. So we got the walker and we're going to the car. We go to the bank, put the money in the bank. And because we don't keep money in the bank, you know, I don't like banks. You know, I only use them for what they needed to be used for. And so, yeah. And so that's kind of how it happened, man. And then we were really big into a Bitcoin community, the Bitcoiners for Freedom group. My friend Jerry Loves Freedom, he runs a channel, and 88 Sats Radio Jor. So we're really tight with both of those communities and a lot of the people in there. We got the disc, you know, we got the Signal groups, and we do the live streams, and, you know, we kind of all just lean on each other and spread positive information. And my kids are on there, and they're in the chat, and they're watching the videos and making videos. And, you know, I'm starting to make videos. And so we've become this well-rounded, like, we're a Bitcoin family. Like, my kids, my wife and I are in it.
It's cool. One day that will be every family.
I hope.
I think that's what is... it's the extraordinary realization that inevitably you come to when you start going down the rabbit hole. It's like, hang on a second. So what are the actual fundamentals at play here? Well, what is money? And unbelievably, none of us have ever asked that question. You know, it's just like, well, money's just something you use. It's like, no, mate, what is it? And it turns out there's specific properties that a good money will hold, and money does three things. And, you know, we can go through the whole money piece, but Saylor was very important on my journey as well. Like, 2020 comes along and I'm scanning financial markets just in general, because that's what I've always done, looking after my own capital. And suddenly it's like, hang on, there's a stock listed company in America that's put Bitcoin on the balance sheet instead of owning dollars in their treasury reserve. What the fuck?
Yeah.
What's going on there? And boom, that was what, like, really sent me deep down. And I'd already owned Bitcoin for 5 years prior to that. So it was more of a, like, speculative allocation that I was playing around with. But suddenly, like, hang on, that's the best investment I've ever made. And now you're seeing stock listed companies do it. Like, find out more, go. And here I am 5 years later, essentially. And it's changed my life, completely changed my life. What I think is cool, though, is when you tell a story like that, is really 2022 is even more recent. And look at the change that's already happened for you, your wife, and your kids. Yeah. It can happen fast, but it's because it makes sense. And I always think, like, the crypto market, quote unquote, a good analogy is like, you've got the stock market, right? Well, what is the stock market? It's like, okay, well, they're equities. Okay, well, what's an equity? Well, it's a portion of a company.
Yeah.
Okay, but companies are different. This is a mining company. This is an airline company. This is a fashion brand. Okay, cool. And then you've got index trackers. And then you've got other forms of passive investment. Then you've got trusts. Then you've got real estate. It's this huge marketplace of different Crazy. Financial products. And they're all investments. And so crypto tokens, they're all crypto tokens, yes, but some of them are completely centralized. Some of them are slightly more decentralized. Some of them are proof of stake. There's all these different design features that means that they're not the same. And so when you finally get to the point, it's like, hang on, maybe this Bitcoin thing is just different to the rest of them. And that's why the Bitcoin not crypto piece is so important as a meme, because it's helping everyone realize, well, actually, no, mate, you're trading airline stocks over there. And this guy here has just got the best gold bar you can possibly buy, and it does something totally different. Have you realized that? And most people haven't. Was there a particular, I mean, you've already mentioned Sailor, but was there a particular podcast that you used to love listening to, or a particular moment when you were in a time and a place where it just really hit home? Generally, I think there's like four or five serious things that you had to experience in your life for you to go, ah, this is why this is important. Yeah. I'd love to know if anything comes to mind.
You want to know what? I'm not going to lie. I mean, Simply Bitcoin was a big one for me. I feel like those guys were super cool. Relatable. I was like going down the rabbit hole with those guys, watching all their old podcasts and then watching stuff like double and triple watching throughout the day. You got to remember, for my business, I mow lawns. And so I have earbuds in and I'm able to consume content for a long period of time. So I was able to go down a lot of podcasts. Simply Bitcoin really was probably one of the ones that really got me going, because they were talking about, and they were using certain words that I didn't really know. Now, they're a little different, not in a negative way, than to how they are now. They've restructured. I think everybody restructures, right? The way they do their podcasts and the way they run their team. So there's no shade. But there was a lot of things and just words that they would use that they would bring up in general. And then I would kind of be like, oh, what is this? Or what does that mean? Or 21 million, you know, you just hear it over. It's almost like, I hate to say it like this. I was really kind of, I wasn't brainwashing myself, but I was a sponge so full of information, I couldn't hold anymore. Mm. And so I really would just went down and then Jor 88, Sats Radio, you know, in his early days, I was in his videos, or not in his streams a lot, watching a lot of his content. He got into a lot of more technical things about miners and, you know, being resourceful for using whatever. I mean, he just got way into it. Wallets and all this stuff. Right. And then, like I said, now recently with Jerry Loves Freedom, that has gave me an understand more of a community, which I think I'm really blessed that I actually went in those steps with the Sailor, then the Simply Bitcoin, then the 88 Sats Radio with Jor, and then Jerry Loves Freedom, because I like being in the community part of it now, knowing what I know and how convicted I am now in the community, because I understand if it was the opposite way around, it maybe would have felt a little different. I feel like there would have been a lot of things I wasn't too sure of. But that was it. But yes, you're right. It also made me question like the dollar and like, what is it? I mean, all these companies within the financial TradFi industry are all, as far as I'm concerned, complete nonsense, because yes, you're owning fractions or full shares or whatever, but like when Apple went down, when Steve Jobs passed away, what happens when Elon Musk passed away? What happens if you got so many variables, right? That a company can just go bust on, right? Mm. They're splitting stocks, whatever. It's just, it never really stood right with me, but that's all that we had at the time, or that's what I was in and that's what I was taught. But then once I discovered Bitcoin and understanding the sovereignty, the scarcity, the, you know, just the whole nine, all the talking points, I realized, oh, dude, this is where it's at. I have to get this. Like, the next best thing is gold. And then maybe silver if you want to, you know, go down the precious metals game. But this beats that. And then you start going, hitting the Twitter. Okay, I'm going to subscribe to this guy, subscribe to that guy. Algorithm starts feeding me all kinds of stuff. I'm following people. I have no idea who the hell they are. I'm just following everybody. I'm just scrolling through feeds. And I'm just like, I'm literally just laserizing.
Amazing.
This, that's how it was. It was crazy.
Well, and so the I mean, I love it because it's a similar feeling that I also went through, and many people that I've interviewed as part of the podcasting journey I've been on, where basically you become like an absolute obsessive around this subject. And I think part of that is like, you're like, fuck, this is a big deal. Like, this is a seriously big deal. Why do I not know anything about this? And I've said this many times before, but I was highly trained in how to make money by both sides of my family and their history, and equally the education I received. But I never stopped to ask, what is money? And that was a critical moment, because actually that changes everything. And you're right. Like, I think personally, the counterparty risk with traditional investments via a financial advisor and the stock market, or equally the debt market, like, it's much, much higher risk than what anyone realizes. And therefore, the pricing of everything that you can receive is mispriced, in my opinion. And suddenly there's this thing that you can self-custody with a low counterparty risk, but also, because of the nature of the adoption phase we're at, huge risk reward to the upside. It's like, this is a no-brainer. And even, you know, you jump into the Austrian economics, it's like, okay, the most saleable good. What the fuck does that mean? It's like, okay, well, there's something out there that in a marketplace rises to the top as the thing that you want in exchange for whatever you're trading. So you bring a goat to market, you bring an apple to market, or you bring your time and your skills. It's like, in exchange for, you don't want a goat, you don't want an apple, you want the thing that sits in the middle. And that is the most saleable good. And like, that now makes sense. What I'm intrigued by is, what were some of, you mentioned like some words you didn't understand and you're diving down this rabbit hole. Could you remember like maybe the top three or top five terms that like in your life you'd never been taught what those things were, and well, what like, the Bitcoin down, journey like, made you learn?
Yeah, they went down like the scarcity, the fungibility. Like, I never really thought about like tangible, like actually like holding something and then not holding something. Yeah. Like the levels of Bitcoin, right? All those I didn't really understand, believe it or not. Like, all of them. The you go down the whole, you know. I didn't, because I was giving my money to an investor. I was giving my money to a market, and they were just holding. I didn't own anything. You don't own anything. Mm. Like, you own nothing. So when I realized that I didn't own anything, and I'm putting all my money in this market, or giving it to some financial advisor and saying, here you go. And he's over here playing, you know, Monopoly and everything. That part is what really got me into the Bitcoin thing. Like, I can own this. This is mine. That blew, I didn't care about that. I didn't care about the limited supply. I didn't care about any of that. I do now. But initially, I said, I don't own anything. And nobody's sitting around with all this gold under their bed. Like, it's just not a reality. It's not happening. It's not happening. And then when they're like, well, you can go and you can, like, trade with people. I remember my first Lightning transaction. Because Lightning was, like, revolutionary. I was like, whoa, Lightning, this is kind of cool. So I got a wallet of Satoshi at the time before they got banned. And then I sent my first Zap. And I was just like, this is crazy. And it wasn't so crazy because it's like, I've done that with Cash App and PayPal. I've already done that. But what was crazy about it was that nobody had to know about it. I didn't have to get acceptance or approval. I didn't have any fees. I don't even remember if there was fees at the time. And if there was, they were so minimal. So there was like no middleman. And that all came back to the control thing. I didn't have to ask for permission. It was permissionless. And I'm a patriot, and I don't like being controlled. And I definitely don't like being told what to do. Mm. I want to be in control and make, like, my life is my life. I only get one, and this is the way I'm going to do it. And when I saw that this aligned with my fundamental, my principles, my values, my morals and ethics, everything, I'm like, this Bitcoin, if I had to say, who am I as a person? I said, oh, here's Bitcoin. This is me. This is who I am. I like my freedom. I don't want to have to conform to anything. It had the limited supply, which I dove deeper into, because initially with the money, yeah, we knew we printed money, but did we really know what it did? I don't think we did. I think we kind of knew. But then once I started going into the 21 million scarcity, and then, whoa, what's a Satoshi? What is that? And I said, oh, that's like the change. Well, wait, actually, Bitcoin is Satoshi's. Satoshi's is Bitcoin. Bitcoin is just like the public name. Like, oh, it's a Bitcoin. Great. Everybody knows that. But people don't know what Satoshis are, or not as many. So once I figured out, and then I started breaking Bitcoin down, just breaking it down further, like mining deeper into like what it is and how it operates with that mining and, you know, all this stuff. I said, well, this is crazy. And this is the first time the retail investors or people like you and I have ever in the history of this world been able to front run the institutions. How powerful is that? Mm. That's crazy.
It's massive. And that's
people, that's freedom.
And it's still true. Like when I look at, even with this explosion in the supposed opportunity of Bitcoin treasury companies, or, you know, the ETFs that launched last year, we're still at the very earliest of stages when it comes to institutional adoption. So people out there listening to this, you can still front run Wall Street. You can still do that, even at give or take $100,000. I was listening to something today. I'll probably publish this episode in 2 weeks' time, roughly. 60% of current Bitcoin holders are underwater. So most of the people that bought Bitcoin in the last, like, it's been 40 or 50 days since the 126K current all-time high was set. So it's like, hang on. So literally half the people that own Bitcoin right now are in the red.
Yeah.
Now, what I would love to understand is how many of those people understand the counterparty improvement that they've gone through to own Bitcoin, and how much of it's self-custodied versus the ETFs, etc. Because in some ways, owning Bitcoin in self-custody at a discount to what you paid for it is still better than wherever your capital was before. Because 100%. You've got to ask permission to get your money out. Oh, excuse me, bank, can you send my money over here, please? Or excuse me, financial advisor, can you liquidate whatever I've got under management? Excuse me, can I do this? Excuse me. And that's the point here, is it's permissionless. It's a great word, that. And if you're wondering if it's true, you can go verify it. Okay, well, this is the issuance schedule for Bitcoin till 2140 or whatever the final date Bitcoin will be mined. No one knows how much gold's in Fort Knox. We don't know. It hasn't had a public review for 50 years. So whatever they say it is clearly not going to be actually true. Oh my gosh. And I think that was such a good lesson for me too, where you dig into the history of money, that really helped too. It's like, okay, so hang on. We used to use glass beads and seashells and things that were easily transportable but hard to find. And that developed into then commodity monies, gold, silver, bronze, and eventually we came across telecommunications, and it's like, okay, well, now we need to send value across oceans. It's not very easy to send commodity monies. Let's just send an IOU. And that was essentially where gold broke, is it couldn't travel across space. It was good at storing value over time, but it couldn't travel over space. And that is the innovation of Bitcoin. It's like, this is digital scarcity. So it travels across space and time, and you can own it yourself. Whoa.
Yeah.
And that fundamental fact still is completely mispriced. Like, people don't understand that today.
No. I think that, sorry. I just,
please.
I really hit on this part because
it gets you fired up, doesn't it? It's great.
Oh man, this part gets me going.
Come on. I mean, we found out. We're so lucky. Whoa.
Jake, I'm telling you, we're blessed. We are blessed. Yes, and if absolutely. Even though you or I might not be able to fully understand what we have in our lifetime, at least our kids and our kids and down the lineage will. When we talk about when we say generational wealth, that's not something that's just tossed and thrown around because it sounds cute. It's a real thing. Now, you have a lot of people out there that will say, you know, one sat will be $1 or move the decimal over and things like that. And I agree with all that. I agree with all that. But this is the people's money, right? This is our money. Okay. Now we all know that stable coins and institutional adoption and TradFi guys and gold bugs and you name it, they're going to get into the game. It's going to happen. That's what happens with any new shiny toy. You're like, ooh, what's that? Let's go check it out. Now, I don't buy for a second and think that, because the thing is we live in a debt-based system. Most people may not know that, but we do. We live in a debt-based system. And the statistic you brought up about the 60% or 65%, I did hear that the other day, and it blew my mind. I'm like, what? We are up here, and that number's to be true? Here's the thing. We're in a tsunami right now. A tsunami sucks the water out, and then it explodes. Now, I believe the four cycle system, the 4 year, the halving cycle and all this and that, and kind of this ebb and flow. I am a believer that that cycle eventually will be broken, if not can be. I don't think that will stay true through the length of time. I think that there's so many variables that are going to happen over a period of time. And although it may still have the fundamentals of how it works, I think that we're not going to see that chart's going to repeat, right? I don't think it's going to repeat exactly. My biggest thing is this. When I buy sats and I'm stacking, I stack every hour, I stack on the hour. I buy every hour on the hour religiously, and I'm smash buying in between highs and lows, right? I think everybody needs to buy religiously, consistently, and set it on a schedule. Not where you're just like, okay, I'm going to manually be doing it. Automate the process. Don't think about it. Take the psychology out of here. Take the headache and every, because our lives are busy. Take it out of here. Buy it regularly. And then you can focus on your smash buys here and there as the market ebbs and flows. That's how I feel about it. And when you're in line and you're in the grocery store, you're shopping or you're at a restaurant or whatever, it's so important to have conversation with someone and it's to be like, you joke with them. You guys accept Bitcoin yet? And they can be like, ha ha ha, no, this and that. You make some small talk. You guys got to start buying Bitcoin. Or you tip in Bitcoin. So you're at a restaurant and you're the waiter's there, a waitress, and be like, oh, you know what? Do you have Bitcoin? They're like, no, oh, I want to give you a tip. But if you're willing to download this wallet, I'll tip you in Bitcoin. And you'd be surprised of some of the individuals that will go through the process. Most won't, and they won't, they won't do it, or they feel like they're like being scammed or something, or I've heard of that, but I'm not sure. And, I think that those little conversations within public, we need to have, and make it a joke, make it fun, because people are a little on the edge. And so that's all I got to say about that. Sorry about that.
No, it's great. And that, what you describe, is viral adoption from the bottom up. It's yes. People who have figured out this thing and researched it very deeply. They've put their money where their mind has gone, put their money where their mouth is. And then it's like, okay, you go from a typical arc, basically, of like, first of all, it's like discover a problem. And then you study that problem. You're a student of the concept, and then you're like, well, what's the solution? And you come across that. And eventually you basically become the teacher. Yeah. And it's very common. And this is what the Bitcoin journey does. And it does it naturally because your life improves. And you look at things around you and you're like, well, you're not going anywhere. You're actually going backwards. Have you heard about this thing that helped me? And it's very natural. You want to necessarily help people. One thing I've certainly found is my approach to like, trying to orange pill people, for better worth of a phrase, I've become less aggressive about it. Like, I just don't, if you're not up for it, I don't care. But what I do try to do, like you said, is pay in Bitcoin. It's like, correct. I pay for my meat in Bitcoin at the moment, and my boxing coach I pay in Bitcoin. And if anyone's up for it, like, I'll send you Bitcoin. And that is such a great way of people getting paid for their product or paid for their time.
Yeah.
And it makes them start using it. It's like, no, create me a Lightning invoice for this amount in Aussie dollars and I'll send it to you. It's like, oh, is this how it works? It's like, yeah, this is how it works. And you scan the QR code and boom, you know, there goes $150 worth of Aussie dollar for whatever you might have paid for. Okay, so backpacker, I'm just want to check with you. How's the battery sitch? Are we okay for another 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, I'm at 39% right now. So let's go for another, let's go for another like 15 or so. And then we'll just do a quick little checkup again.
Yeah, cool. All right. So there's a bunch of things I want to ask you about, but given we're talking about like how you try and ingratiate Bitcoin into people around you, you're creating content. Was that something you used to do? Why did you start and how have you found the process?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I always liked the thought of creating content. I enjoy talking with people. I can talk with anybody, not a problem. But it was really that leap of faith of like being like, am I good enough? Am I going to have enough viewers? It was really kind of, I felt like I was going to fail. Once I was able to change my mindset, and a lot of this is, I'm really grateful for this. And I give a lot of this credit to my wife. You know, my wife told me, no, get out of your head. You can do this. You're going to do it. Pick up your phone and start recording. Mm. I said, okay. And then I surround myself with good people. You know, my buddy, Jerry, he's a good person and he's really important to my kids and my family. And we got a really good relationship. And he said, bro, do it. And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. Then I finally did it. And then just, I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to say. I'm going to mess up. I need to edit this video. You know, just going, getting in my head again. And I'm like, you know what? No. What I'm bringing, I'm not trying to be like anybody else. I'm just want to record my kids. I want to talk about random stuff, good conversation. And I don't want to be technical. I don't want to talk about charts. I don't want to talk about Bitcoin is this, this and that, because that's just not me. It's not my channel. It's not what I want to do. I just want to have good general conversation and maybe some current events and, you know, just regular stuff and tie Bitcoin into like life and psychology, right? Because I get really into the whole like the psychology of things and thinking of vlogs or recording yourself as digital journals, right? Because you're going to look back on these things and your kids are going to look back or your grandkids are going to look back on these digital journals we're creating and be like, man, that was grandpa or that was dad, you know? And I think that that's so important to create and being able to do that and then tie Bitcoin in it together. So it's not very heavy on the Bitcoin, but it's enough to tie in like how it makes sense, right? And then also circular economy with like an individual saying like, you know, because I agree with you what you said about the orange pilling thing. And if someone, you talk to somebody about it and you know that they're not having it, then it's kind of done. You just kind of leave it, right? But if they have that little sense of interest and you know they do, then you're like, hey, check it out. I wanted to create these videos on this YouTube channel that I'm doing because I want to be able to have something that I can refer people to and say, hey, why don't you come check out my channel? And I'm just a regular guy with a gimbal and a lapel. And I'm just talking with you. I'm not some like, you know, overly over the top individual. You know, I'm not a Jack Maulers. I'm not, you know, I'm just me. And I want to cater to the family men, the dads, the fathers, the dads who say that they're too busy to do stuff. Like you're not, you can create content, have fun with your kids, go longboarding, go skateboarding with them, go fishing and still create a video and throw it out there. So that's kind of what that's what I envision, you know?
Awesome. And the irony is when you start creating content, it's no one's looking. So all the fear and worry that you have around whether or not you're good enough and the self-sabotage around like, I shouldn't bother doing this because I'm just going to fuck it up. It's kind of irrelevant because no one's looking anyway.
Yeah.
But it is also very, very powerful in terms of the digital breadcrumbs. This is something I've described before, actually, where people come across your stuff and you have no idea who's viewing it. You just get one view. But you then have an impact on them such that they make big decisions. And that, I think, is for me the most fascinating part of the kind of content flywheel, where like you don't really realize the positive impact you're having on people's lives until suddenly you get contacted by someone or you meet someone in person. They're like, oh no, I've listened to all your podcast episodes. You're like, what do you mean? All of them? That's like 100 hours. And they're like, yeah. Like this one guy I met at a Bitcoin conference once. He'd gone through every episode of Bitcoin with Jake, which was a previous podcast I made. I did 80 of them over the course of a year. It's like, holy shit, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
Thank you. And you have no idea they're doing it. So awesome for starting. And so has there been, this is a better question. Have you created a process that you go through to create content, like at a certain time of day, or maybe you're catching ideas in an Apple note somewhere? How do you do it?
Yeah. I do that. I have a little notepad app that I use, and I'll make some like digital notes in there. Or if I'm listening to something, maybe I'll timestamp a video and then screenshot it and then put it in my folders, you know, for later. Next thing you know, you end up with like, you know, a billion things, you know, you can't cover, which is great, which is great. Better to have more than not enough. But as far as time of the day goes, I find like evenings work well for me after we've winded down. Maybe we've already had dinner and I can go on a walk, right? Or the kids maybe want to get some energy out or something. Or if I'm at the park, the kids are playing, they're occupied. Because really a lot of it is based around the family dynamics of my life of you know, I'm not going to do it in the middle of the haywire hour where everybody's bouncing off the walls, right? So I kind of just go with the flow with what works in my life. And then in regards to the content, there's a lot of the times where I start a video and it's like, wait, I have this whole thing in my head going. And I go off the top. I don't do script. I don't do any of that. And I switch it all the time. I'm like, oh, I was going to talk about this, and I completely switched it. And so it just comes back to that vibe thing of what I'm feeling, you know. And I've just learned to be open and accepting to not being perfect. And there's going to be faults, or I might say something wrong in the video, or I may use a word that maybe I thought meant something and it didn't. And learn to just embrace and laugh about, like, you know, my work, my content, because I just want it to be pure, raw, and genuine. That's it. Mm. You know, so
that's really cool. I had a meditation teacher for about a year and a half, 2 years, and I was at the time, because I'd started creating podcasts, and opportunities came out of that to be involved in certain businesses and to like MC conferences. So here in Australia, I grew up in the UK, but I now live in Australia. My wife's Aussie, and there's been some Bitcoin-only conferences, one called the Bitcoin Bush Bash and another Bitcoin Alive. And I've ended up doing either presentations or MC. So you stand up on stage and you introduce different people and run panels. It's like,
wow,
I never expected to do that. But those are opportunities that came out of creating content, and people get drawn to whatever your vibe is, to echo that point. And they're like, that's the vibe we want on the stage. Can you come and do this? And you know, suddenly there's 400 people that have paid for a ticket standing there listening to you. You're like, shit, how did I get here? But the point I wanted to make and read the meditation was the guidance that I got was like, have faith in the fact that you cannot say the wrong thing. You will say what was meant to be said, nothing more, nothing less. And what that meant was that I got invited to Indonesia. I went to Bali and did an MC job in Indonesian Bitcoin conference. And that was an amazing experience. But I had, you know, when you step up on stage as an MC, it's like, okay, well, your job is really is like the anchor for the day, so to speak. But you want conversation to flow. You don't want to like overshadow the panelists or the main speakers. You want to help people engage with the content. So it's kind of a specific role in a sense of like just guiding everyone through the other stuff that's more important.
Yeah.
And so I was creating notes and I was like, how am I going to do this? And I suddenly realized it's like, just get up there and start talking. Have a couple of things in mind as to what you need to say to fill that little segment. So it's like, you know, hello and welcome through to the first panel, introduce them. And then think about something cool that happened in that first panel that you can relate to your own experience and then tee up the next conversation. And suddenly I got into this flow where people are like, hang on a second, Jake, you're just on stage talking. How do you do that? And I was like, I don't know. It just kind of happens. And I went through some of your vlogs and it's similar. You're just channeling something and having faith that what you're saying is what you're meant to say in the moment. is an incredibly liberating thing. And if people get value tuning into it, great. If they don't, doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We're going to be going to the Bitcoin conference in April. So I'm stoked about that.
Cool.
I wanted to go last year, but it was just didn't work out with scheduling. But yeah, man, it's I look back and I watch some of my first one, my second one, or whatever, and I go down. I don't have a ton, but I see the growth. Yeah. I see the personal growth, and it's so therapeutic. And I had mentioned that, and I think in a video recently, that it was therapeutic to do this, because I feel like you bust out of your shell and you become confident or more confident, and you're just able to just to talk, being able to talk into a camera. Some people just think you just do it, and it's a very powerful thing. I'm starting to find out more and more. And it's interesting, because it's like that pre-jitter, or it's the butterflies, right? Like when you went on stage.
Don't fuck it up. Like,
oh my God. You know, and then once you get those first couple sentences out, words out, then you're like, we're good. We're rolling. Let's go. You know, and so, yeah, I agree. It's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Hey, mate, you there? Sorry, I lost you for a second.
Oh, I'm here. I was just saying it's a beautiful thing. It's so liberating.
It is. It absolutely is. Okay, so I'm conscious of time, and an area that I have to ask you about before we finish, which is homeschooling.
Yeah.
What? And you've already described the situation you came up against as a family, and school not fitting into the schedule that you were helping your wife navigate. To me, at least, and I've also got three kids and we're homeschooling, I think a little younger than yours, 5, 3, and 1 at the moment. Homeschooling is not bringing school home. For me, at least at the moment, it's literally just being a dad and being as present as possible and being the primary caregiver. Yes. What does homeschooling mean to you? And perhaps you could paint a picture of, like, what does the average day look like for you guys looking after your kids?
So, homeschooling for us isn't always just the reading, writing, arithmetic, and like sitting down doing book work all day long. I think it's a lot of life lessons. I think it's responsibilities. I think it's understanding how a schedule works, and things as simple as clean your room, do your chores. Those are important because those are something you're going to have to do in life. But also being able to teach my kids to think freely, to be able to have opinions and thoughts and be able to say them. Also, don't be afraid to do what other people say is not normal, or like, don't be afraid to question things, essentially. I think also that for us on the daily journey, or in our daily life, let me just plug this in real quick. On our daily life, I think it's it changes day to day, because we do a lot of doctor's appointments, therapy sessions, extracurricular activities. And so our homeschooling is very ebb and flow in regards to, like, we don't just sit down at a table in our house and do homeschooling for 6 hours. Right. So we volunteer at a local food bank. We volunteer at a local nursing home, because I believe having the kids understand the quality of being able to give your time to do good things is important, because that builds character. And I think it's always good to give. We do that. We're out exercising, whether we're doing the longboarding or we're playing at the park, or stuff at the library a lot. And when we do a lot of our homeschooling, we actually go to the library. And because we just have a plethora of information available, whether it's physical books, internet access, and it's quiet. And there is a little bit more room, because in our tiny house, which is, 365 square feet, essentially, it's a little more difficult to kind of really get that good vibe going with everybody kind of tripping on each other with, like, books everywhere. So we do that. And then as far as curriculum goes, you know, we just really stick with, we there's like a rubric we follow where like there's certain benchmarks, and I'll look at my state's benchmarks of where we should be at just to kind of get a guideline. And it's, we don't necessarily always follow them exactly, but we know where we need to be at with teaching them certain things and where they need to be at. It's really just kind of taking it into our own hands of control and understanding that, you know, their future, educational future, is we are putting that in our hands. But I do think that there's a lot of things that kids need to know and then don't need to know. And I feel like I really just want to home in on things like money's a big one with me, obviously, because we deal with that on a daily basis. And that yes. wrecks a lot of people's lives. So money and economics and history is really big. And then obviously reading and writing, math, I try to avoid a lot of the fluff stuff or stuff that I just feel isn't as important at the moment. And there's going to be things they're learning in their 20s still, you know, but
forever.
Yeah, forever.
It's like learning how to learn. I really love the idea of being fluid to the day. Like yeah. If there's an appointment you got to go to, or if there's, you know, for example, I take my daughters to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but I do it when I can. And the class is always on a weekday at 3:45. If I can't get there, no stress. Or equally, if it's like, you know, things just come up, right? It's like, okay, we've got to do this today. And to me, that works very nicely because it actually makes the things that they have to do in their day, they're still so young as well, but like it changes. And that's great because life changes the whole time. Yes. It's not about sitting at a fucking desk in a uniform and trying to memorize stuff. It's like you now have a phone that can teach you anything you want in 3 seconds. Like you don't need any of that stuff right now. But what you do need is to understand how money works, understand how your body works, understand how your mind works, and interact with people around you to then trade. And it's so cool to see other people making decisions with their own kids. So something I've been wanting to say throughout this conversation is you've used the word control a lot. But it strikes me it's actually more about independence.
Yes.
And not wanting others to control you. And it's like, correct. No, I can take independence, or I can independently think about my kids' education or my own money or my own actions, and you're not going to tell me how to do that. What are some of the biggest lessons from taking back the independence of your kids' education? Like, were there some things that you're really worried about that turn out to be kind of completely irrelevant? Or have you seen your kids interacting in daily life with other kids or other situations where you're like, that's an absolutely like that they're doing that because they've been at home with us.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of this also stems from some of my history and my wife's history, which I don't want to get too far into in regards to that. But, you know, our upbringings were a little rocky to say the least. And then with our parents and the things that we were subjected to and taught and the things that we lacked because we weren't taught and we were actually essentially robbed of these things that I feel like every individual or child should have. That's a big one for us. And so we just wanted our kids not to be subjected to like learning a certain way. I think it's really important, like you said, I want my kids to learn how to adapt to all situations, to be like a chameleon. You can change the hat in whatever situation you're in. That's important to me because that's real life, like you said. I wanted to bring that up earlier. I think that in order to be adaptable, it's just so, so important. I've used that skill so many times, as well as I'm sure you have. You know, with getting on stage or having to change this or change that or ebb and flow with life. Maybe you blow a tire out on the highway. You got to, okay, boom, boom, let's get this going. Let's get the show on the road. I just want my kids to understand that there's more to life than just doing one thing. Like, I just want to teach my kids that in life they can be whatever they want to be and you don't have to just do what other people say and you can do whatever you want. If you want to, you know, be a librarian, be the best librarian there is. If that's what makes you happy, I just want to give my kids an opportunity to be able to flourish in this world because the the world you grew up in when you were younger and the world I grew up in when I was younger is substantially different than the world we're in now. Mm. And we can't change that. There's variables in this world that are happening and things that are going on in general that are very scary. And I need to be able to see this and adapt and allow my kids to understand it. Cause we talk about a lot of current events. I don't shield my kids from anything. My kids see everything. And I mean everything, because I feel like it's important, because if I don't do that, I'm doing them injustice by lying to them. I want my kids to be adaptable. We go hunting, we go fishing, we go up in the mountains, we go in the snow, we go camping. We do all these things that some kids that live in the city will never know how to do. And I think that, you know, us growing up in the city and now we're living in the country, I was kind of like, man, I wish I grew up in the country. But I don't know, maybe they might say the same thing where they were like, well, I wish I grew up in the city. I don't know. But we just want to best equip them to be a well-rounded individual. We'll always be here. But I want to introduce them to a little bit of everything and then allow them to circumvent their own decisions, their own thoughts. And mom and dad will always be here.
Awesome. And what a great, a very inspiring picture. A lot of people will go, oh, you're irresponsible for homeschooling your kids, or, you know, oh, it's not the optimal way of helping them through life. But I mean, from my experience so far, at least, I couldn't disagree more with those stances. And there's kind of two key pillars in my mind, which is like, number one, take control of your money. Like, yes. Absolutely critical. That financial piece is the bedrock of other decisions that you can make. But the second one is get your kids out of the educational system. And that phrase, you know, if you send your kids to Caesar, don't be surprised if they come back as Romans. It's like, if you send your kids off to childcare and then to school and they spend 15 years in the system, like aged 18, what are they going to be? Yep. Well, they're going to be primed to be a taxpaying goody two shoes for the next 50, 60 years, which is exactly what the system wants, without ever asking, for example, the simple question, what is money? And there's some crazy stats around how many people suffer from financial illiteracy. Like, it's something like 2 in 3 people globally don't understand inflation. Like, fuck, that's nuts.
Scary.
And they're all being stolen from. Oh, wow. Well, I think that's a really cool place, Backpacker, to wrap this up. And speaking of kids, I can hear mine just getting home in the background. Yeah, so yeah. Dad duties beckon. What an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
It was a pleasure.
Final thing is, where can people reach out and get in touch if they want to do so?
So you can find me on Noster at BTC cool. Backpacker. I know we operate on NPubs on there, but if you look BTC Backpacker, you'll find me on there. And then you can find me on YouTube, just BTC-Backpacker. On either platform, that's where you'll be able to find me.
Awesome. And I'll also put some stuff in the show notes as well. So
I appreciate
can have a look
it.
There. All right, BTC Backpacker, thank you so much for your time.
Jake, my man, I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you.